We're gonna start our conversation is about AI or ChatGPT later. We're gonna talk about in physical education, higher education, in PITS. So we're gonna start with some general discussion like last year in November, the ChatGPT was developed, and since then we had a lot of discussion, conversation, and the topics about AI. And I recently in AERA they had the conversation about AI and ChatGPT as well. So today we're gonna continue, or we're gonna explore this topic. So first question is
Ping,
we're gonna
sorry, Ping. Before we get started, I actually just Emily is going to just do a little bit more of an introduction. So thanks for introducing the topic. And then Emily, do you want to jump in real quick?
Awesome. Sorry, Ping. You're so enthusiastic and ready to talk about this topic that I love your energy. Before we started, we wanted to just recognize and send a thanks to our PEAT Collaborative organizing members that have chosen to rotate off of the group. A big thanks to Kevin Richards, Risto Martinen, and Jennifer Kraus, who served as part of our organizing group for the last 3 years. Them stepping off of the collaborative allows some space and voice. So we're so excited to welcome Ping Fan from SUNY Cortland, Shannon Mulhern from Nebraska Kearney, and our third new wonderful contributing member is Donal Howley at Towson University. So we are very excited to have new ideas, fresh perspectives to bring to the collaborative that also will bring new topics to our conversations and our community as well. So as Ping was introducing, today's topic, as you saw, is going to be to use or not to use artificial intelligence in PEAT and HEAT, and what sorts of implications that has for us as a community now and into the future. So I'm going to officially turn it over to Ping Fan and Chad Killian, who are going to help facilitate our conversation today.
Thank you, Emily. So just back to this topic and conversation, we're gonna talk about it. So let's think about it. What do we think about the recent emergence of AI driving tools in higher ed? Any thoughts you have regarding this tool, AI tool in higher ed? And you can put your thoughts, ideas in the chat box, or raise your hands that we can unmute that, and you can share your thoughts. All right, I think yeah. So I'm gonna just see something during maybe you are typing your thoughts. This is a great topic right now. Everybody talks about ChatGPT and AI. Actually, there are some people they debate about this AI tool is it's really good for us or it's not. So use it or not use it in for our research or for teaching or for learning. And this tool, personally, I feel like this is it's a tool. It's like just other technology, and this is a new technology that we can use for our teaching and for our students are learning. And I just told my colleague this morning about ChatGPT, and it's more like a search and search engine, like a Google search. We put a question there that ChatGPT gonna use all the existing data to generate the responses to your question. Instead of for Google search, when we ask questions or we type some keywords there, and there are multiple resources there. So that's about the magic of AI. Any thoughts you have on AI tools in higher ed?
I saw this interesting thing today on Twitter. The Digital Learning Collaborative set it out from a blog, but it's from, I think, a consulting firm. So it's very unscientific, but it kind of helped me like think about all this, this sort of process from November until now. It's called the new hype cycle. It kind of looks a little bit like diffusions of innovation. I know some of you worked with that, but it basically starts with a giant slope of peak expectations over a very short period of time. Then it dips down in what they call the trough of disillusionment. Like, this is not as good as we thought it was going to be. And then it kind of grows up again over a little bit more time, what they call the slope of enlightenment. And then finally it evens out somewhere in the middle between the peak and the trough in this, what they call plateau of productivity. I put a link in the chat if you want a more detailed visual, but I think, you know, we might be able to think of it along this new hype cycle where maybe we're, at least me personally, entering the slope of enlightenment. I was very excited about it at first. Then I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, what are the implications of this technology? What is that going to do to our humanity? Get away from it. And now through some use, some intentional use and exploration, I'd like to say become a bit more enlightened and balanced. So I think that's kind of an interesting way of looking at it for those who are interested.
Yeah, and we have some folks, they share their thoughts. Like Matt said, I have not dived into AI to this point. I have started to use some AI searches to help myself. I have used a few to see if my students can use AI to complete their work. And actually, later on, we're going to talk about how we can use AI to create lesson plans and how we can critique the lesson plans that AI created. Cool. Any questions or concerns do you still have regarding this use of AI? Any questions, concerns do we have?
I think one of my concerns, and probably this is shared with some others, is that I don't know a lot about it. And with anything that's new like this, it takes time to learn about it. And so, and as Chad was kind of saying, as you learn about it, it changes. You know, I think back to like heart rate monitors, for example, when we first started using them in physical education, and then the technology was like going quicker than the companies could actually catch up with, you know, for those pieces. And I think with anything tech related, that's my biggest piece is sort of, you know, as Chad was saying, kind of the hype cycle. Like when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is cool. And I kind of looked into it, got overwhelmed. And I'm like, I don't know if I have time to like learn enough about this to be good at it. So I think that's kind of my biggest thing right now is the time that I would need to invest in order to really know how to use it appropriately to incorporate it, for example, into my teaching or to know whether or not students are using it in their assignments and whatnot.
Are there any other type A folks out there? Any other type A folks out there who feel a little bit like they're cheating by using it? Here in a minute, we're trying to keep the conversation broad for now, just kind of get perspectives of the group. I'm going to put in some prompts. I'll share my screen, put in some prompts just to kind of show you how it works. But even doing that, I'm like, if I use this in my class, you know, I feel a little, I don't know, it's still, I think, new enough where it maybe feels a little bit like cheating. I don't know if there's any like personal reflective processes that anybody's kind of felt as well.
All right, so now I can unmute myself. So I have experienced using ChatGPT personally in my class. It was an assessment class last semester. And I showed them how convenient it can be. Just I asked ChatGPT, okay, give me 10 multiple choice questions for soccer rules. And then it just came up 10 questions like in 3 seconds. And then we went through all the questions together with the students and we found several questions were inaccurate at all, totally wrong. So I show them it is okay for you to use ChatGPT in a convenient way, but you always have to make sure to double check whether it provides you the correct information. Because if you don't know the rules or if you know the basic information about soccer, then you won't be able to sort out what is wrong and what is the right answer. So I think it can be useful in some point if you can use it wisely to save a lot of time. But for now, I don't see like it can be used in a, like higher order thinking questions such as reflecting or applying their knowledge to like complex information.
Good points. Thank you, Mason. It's definitely, so like when we ask questions or we put keywords to AI or to ChatGPT, and it will help us generate the assessment, the quiz, the exam. And it really depends. We need to look at it. It's not like every question is great. So we need to look at it. Are those good questions or appropriate for our class, for our teaching? So that it's really important for us to have all our students. We need that critical thinking when the resources are generated from AI. So that's a great point. Thank you, Mason. Anybody, if you have any thoughts, you can raise your hand and that we can unmute, and we would love to hear your ideas. Dan, raise your hand. And Risto, next.
Hey, everyone. Obviously, the use of AI and ChatGPT specifically, it's really kind of a double-edged sword. So one of the obvious issues that we're going to face in higher ed is plagiarism and students passing work on as their own. And if you've gone in and experienced it all, ChatGPT will actually make up sources that look legitimately formatted. So you have to kind of be aware when students are submitting work that it may be more legwork to where it looks on the surface that everything looks like it would be good, but sometimes citations are completely made up. But on the opposite end, there's lots of AI tools. At Longwood, we're working, I'm on part of an AI committee where we're kind of exploring different resources. And there's things like, let's see, SciSpace, which is a Chrome extension, which will, you can upload PDFs and research articles, and it'll do a really good job of annotating bibliographies and summarizing articles. I just was sent a link on Research Rabbit app, so I haven't looked at that, but there are a lot of different ways. It's a tool that we're going to use, and just like Grammarly and spell check, I don't think it's going away. So it's better off to kind of try to, I'm at least trying to embrace it and jump in and at least show my students ways that it can be used and the faults with it. So and the pitfalls of using it and not citing yourself so they don't run into issues of plagiarism and trying to pass off work that is their own. And it's not perfect, but a lot of times it's good for getting started, showing them, giving them a direction. And so that's my thoughts.
Thank you, Dan. Mm-hmm.
I think Dan brings up a good point. If we kind of think about this, since our focus right today is teaching, and if you're interested in, you know, conversations on AI and research, there was a recent AERA SIG 93 panel on that, which is focused on the research. But if we think about how we can use it as teaching, what Dan says, just preparing students to use it and helping them navigate, you know, the appropriate and ethical use of AI for their own learning and submission of assignments, et cetera. I think there's also a way that we can use it to help ourselves prepare for teaching. In a minute, I'm going to share my screen and I'll show you some prompts that you can use or strategies that you can use to help yourself prepare for lessons. And then I think another interesting area that we can be mindful of and brainstorm together potentially is how we can use ChatGPT actively during lessons as sort of an on-site or in real time resource for students. And so I'm going to share my screen and just kind of give everybody, since I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with the tool at all. So what ChatGPT is it's a chatbot. It's a large language model where it looks like this. It's very simple. I'm paying $20, or my department's paying $20 a month for me to be able to use it as a teaching resource, as a research resource. And so this is the interface. And then you start asking it questions similar to, you know, if you go on a website and there's like a chatbot, hey, how can I help you? It's kind of like that. So I came up with a couple prompts that we can look at. The first one is, you know, what are some discussion questions for an undergraduate course to promote critical thinking about physical education? That's something we might integrate into an introductory course. I think something like this is interesting for me and for all of us because we have our own biases. What are our little pet topics? This, I think, can help cover a bunch of different bases maybe you're not tended toward talking about. So you can see I plugged in the prompt. Here's my prompt. And then ChatGPT down here is working. So it's kind of friendly. It gives me some encouragement, whatever. That's weird. But here are some interesting discussion points related to physical education that this chatbot suggests. Purpose and objectives. Why is it important in the curriculum? And I'm describing this a little bit in detail for people that might be listening to this on the podcast after this session. Curriculum standards. How do these come about? What's influenced? Diversity and inclusivity, health and wellness in relation to physical education, and so forth. So you can see it gives a large list of discussion questions that you can or cannot integrate. So if we're still active participants in something like this as teachers, where we decide what to integrate, if anything. So it works as a good brainstorming topic. It can also create a template for PowerPoints. Now, it doesn't develop the PowerPoint per se. But if I'm teaching something like social emotional learning, I want to teach something like this at an introductory level, again, for maybe an introductory course, or it's a topic that I'm not as familiar with, we can say, hey, ChatGPT, can you create a 15-point PowerPoint or whatever on social emotional learning in elementary physical education? So you can see, has a title, has a subtitle, and then it even suggests images. So if you're somebody like me that likes to be creative, you know, you can still choose the points, you can fill in the information, but essentially what it's producing right now is a shell of a PowerPoint presentation on social emotional learning in elementary physical education. I'm still responsible for looking at the accuracy of the information. I'm still responsible for filling it in, but still typing out a nice little shell for an introductory presentation on whatever topic I chose. Okay. I thought it would be interesting also to show lesson planning. So this is where we're getting into demonstrating to our students potential uses and professional developments if we're involved in community partnerships. Is ChatGPT an effective way to develop lesson plans? I know Jen Krause said something about assessments, potentially. It could also be a prompt. But here I'm entering, develop a lesson plan based on the SHAPE American National Standards for a 53-minute seventh grade mixed gender PE class, focus on developing soccer skills, using a teaching game for understanding. Now we're getting into application of models-based practice. And we'll see if it's good at all. So it comes up with the grade level, comes up with a learning objective. I know a lot of my undergraduate students have issues developing strong learning objectives. You know, we all have our opinions about, you know, whether or not this is a good one or not. But it shows the standards that it allegedly addresses with the instruction. It has an equipment list, starts with a warm-up. Not very fun, obviously. It's just dynamic stretching and light jogging around the field. There's an introduction. Small-sided game. So it's looking a little bit like TGFU in some ways. And it spits out information. So we can use it for our lesson plans. We can suggest to our students how they might be able to use this for the beginning of their planning process. Obviously, we need to help them develop a filter They obviously still need content knowledge, pedagogical knowledge to be able to implement effectively. But it even goes as far as suggesting assessment and previous homework assignments. Colin, you want to jump in? I think you can unmute yourself.
Thanks, Chad. So I'm admittedly a bit of a Luddite and very slow to adopt new technologies for whatever reason. I just know that about myself. My knee-jerk reaction, first time I heard about ChatGPT, is that, okay, it's probably another example of de-skilling teachers or de-skilling students, however you want to look at it. But for people who are learning to teach or are in the job of teaching, my first thoughts were, well, if someone else does the work for you, you know, maybe the work is right in a lot of instances, but you didn't come up with it. So maybe that over-reliance is going to have some problems on down the road. But then thinking about it more, I wonder, is it also a chance to upskill? So it's a new set of skills. It may delete some of the older skills, but maybe the new skills can make teachers better or make learners better at what they do. So I'm still on the fence, I have to say, but I'm in my own teaching right now. What I'm doing is I'm not allowing technology in my class. I just say, put all your electronic devices away. We're going to have a time together. We're going to take advantage of each other's brains. But I know that that is very much an extreme response. And I'm open to looking at how to change my teaching and change my lesson structure and everything else to accommodate this change in technology. But I would like to know from the group and other resources, you know, what may be really some great examples of upskilling and good arguments against how we haven't de-skilled teachers or learners with this technology.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Colin. So the demonstration here is objective. This is what it can do. And I think the questions that Colin brought up, that you brought up, are essential. And that's part of the conversation I think we do need to have because of the implications. If students rely on this too much, what impact does that have on their teaching practice? Okay. We saw some comments and you hear things, you know, it's here to stay. So we might as well embrace it. Believe it or not, I'm also sort of a Luddite. I'm very skeptical of this, despite what it might seem. I found some values in it, but I think there are a lot of downstream implications that we need to consider together before we jump on board with this wholesale. So I'm really glad you brought that up, Colin. I think that's the nuance that we need in these types of conversations, especially with tools as powerful as AI. Like, this isn't just putting a heart rate monitor on and figuring out how to use it. This is like, what is the role of content knowledge now that you have a resident content expert in ChatGPT? Is a question that I asked. But Risto, do you want to jump on and make your point here about a little bit more critical take as well? Or not, he's having too much fun on his porch. Risto said in his chat, you know, some of the activities, if you can kind of read, I know it's small on my screen, but they might not be appropriate. So we do, if this is something that's integrated in your class, if we think students are going to be using this, they still need to have a critical lens and they still need to have a deep understanding of appropriate practice. So they're not just cutting and pasting this into their gym. We all know how contextual physical education is, and what comes out of a chatbot, more times than not, at least at this stage, might not align well with the community that's being implemented in, the school space, the equipment needs, et cetera. Colin, thanks again.
I think this doesn't answer Colin's question, but it continues to extend it. The conversation is two pieces. One would be refining. As Chad was posting and providing these examples, we have to engineer prompts to then refine ChatGPT to what we're actually trying to get at. So if in fact the lesson plan that Chad generated using that prompt is too general, then we have to have the knowledge to be able to say, can you then identify some specific adaptation skills or activities for learners who have limited lower extremity mobility, right? I need to know what I'm looking for in order to ask ChatGPT or another tool to refine it to kind of get me to where it is that I'm wanting to know, or what more information there is. So I think there's some technical language that's still required by content experts to be able to know what to ask and what it is we're trying to, how we generate those prompts to help the tool help us be better at our jobs in some ways.
So maybe that's an example of upskilling. Yeah. Like, do we want to, is a effective chat bot prompting something in our undergraduate classes that might be useful to address? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, Chad.
Aristo, go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think that's right. I think, if we think about teaching students 10 years ago, we would never tell them to go to Wikipedia and copy and paste something verbatim and put it in as, their own work. And I think if we look at ChatGPT in that same way, like, you can't just copy and paste something. Like the examples that I've used in my class when I say, let's do an exercise and do this specific lesson plan, let's break down the game. It doesn't work. Like, it would be a terrible experience for all of the students. And logically, you wouldn't know who's on what team. And so if you just copy and paste something that the chatbot, produces, you still have to have that information. Like, if you put in questions about research, you have to be able to cross-reference that research to make sure that it's actually interpreting it correctly. I think that Chad, you and I have had several conversations about, like, the ethics of this all. Like, where is that line of ethics? Like, I have a chapter due. I finished everything but the summary, and I'm sitting there staring at the screen, totally burnt out on writing this chapter, and thinking, how easy it would be to make this into a uploaded in ChatGPT and tell ChatGPT to write me a summary for 150 words and I'm done. I get to go to sleep. And I think those are legit, at this point, ethics questions. Because a student, let's say a graduate student that doesn't know yet, right? They might use it and they might pass off that ChatGPT work as work that is published in the journal. And that's the same level of a pre-service teacher who's passing off ChatGPT content as their own work. It comes down to ethics.
And we kind of asked that question at the end of our blog for Ash Casey's blog, was like, well, if ChatGPT can do X, Y, Z, what's the point of me doing it? Just let the chatbot do it. When maybe the other question is why let the chatbot do my lesson plans when I can be enriched and creative and gain personal development through that? So I think these are the human questions we have to ask, is especially when it comes to research. And this is, teaching is a little different, obviously, but, teaching is an iterative, reflective process, just like research in many ways. And so if we're relying on chatbots, if we're having our students rely on that, at what cost to the students' personal enrichment, their personal growth and their learning, does that have, I think, is a question that we want to answer. Jamie, sorry, your hand's been up for a while.
That's okay. Luckily it was my virtual hand, so it didn't get tired. So I think that some great points are coming up in the chat, and I can't help but compare this to conversations that we've always had. And Matt mentioned in the chat, just like any technology tool, remember it's a tool. And I think about, like, when Dance Dance Revolution came out, right? And like, teachers got Dance Dance Revolution and they put it on in their gyms. And guess what? They weren't teaching anything. People were just doing technology, unless they were actually had learning objectives associated with it and were incorporating, maybe content around dance and different things. But just putting on the technology isn't teaching. And so I think that's one thing we have to remember as a tool. And another chat or comment came up later about, if we have teachers, we know we're in this crisis, right? We have a lot more non-traditional licensure students, emergency licensure teachers coming out into the field. And these same criticisms have been made in the past about sort of pre-packaged curriculum like Spark, for example, or Dynamic Physical Education that have these kind of pre-created lesson plans that people don't have to do themselves. And so we're having the same conversations that we've had in the past about other tools, if you want to put it that way, related to teaching. And so I think that that's not lost on me, is that kind of every time something like this comes out that's like new and different, we have to establish how we're going to be able to use that in order to achieve our goals as a profession, right?
Yeah, and I like what Eric mentioned about, you know, the ability for teachers who may be new to a subject, you know, using AI to kind of get ideas. So I have this prompt down here. I'm a fourth grade teacher who wants to integrate physical activity into my lessons. I don't know any PE teachers. My PE teacher might be checked out, whatever. Like I'm kind of rural. I don't have, you know, there aren't a lot of internet resources. ChatGPT, what do you suggest? And then we can kind of, you know, many of us being experts in this area, or at least peripherally related, can judge for ourselves if these are good strategies. And the funny thing is they're probably drawing from some of the work we've done. That's where they're outputting. So, you know, we think about if anybody teaches a physical activity class for classroom teachers, I think there's one at University of Illinois, I know. This would be a great thing to showcase potentially, because I think Matt said, you know, can we use this tool to help our students be better movers? Can we show classroom teachers how they can use this tool to integrate movement into their classrooms? So, I mean, this thing's still putting out prompts about how they could, classroom teachers could integrate movement. And these are general, but it gives ideas. And some of these are good ideas, I think. So we can see role play and simulation, integrated PE concepts, classroom layout might have an impact on physical activity, using dance and music, go outside and learn. Okay. So these are just, you know, I just want to give a ballpark, you know, overview of how ChatGPT can use. I'm really glad people brought up, you know, the critical side of this. And so I think, you know, moving forward, it's going to be up to us to see the best use for it. And just for the sake of being meta, because we're going to transition here for future, for additional discussion, you know, we can look and see what ChatGPT says we should be talking about. I input, when discussing the use of ChatGPT in higher education, specifically physical education, teacher education programs, what might professors consider as a range of critical discussion points? So this is the rest of the conversation. We'll get a little meta here and use these questions to guide our discussion. Not really, but you know, just wanted to showcase the use. I'm loving what's going on in the chat here, and Ping's going to guide us in a little bit of discussion about maybe some challenges related to using this in our classrooms. ChatGPT has good points here, though.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's just so interesting that we can get some ideas. And as we mentioned, we just discussed that ChatGPT or AI, it's a tool, and it depends on how we use it. It can be a good tool for our teaching and for our research of our students' learning. So it's when we talk about the ChatGPT, the lesson plans, I was thinking about PE Central. Like we can go to PE Centrals and get some lesson plans for teaching. And are those tasks or games or activities are appropriate for my teaching, of my students' teaching? And that's the question. That's the question that we have. And the same here, when we use ChatGPT, that's the same question we have. So okay, those questions are good or appropriate for my class, or the lesson plan Chad just made, it's appropriate for my teaching. So it's a tool, and I feel like it's an interesting tool and good tool could be. And so let's move on to the next discussion. So we kind of look at the ChatGPT, how we can use ChatGPT, and Is there any challenges do you envision with the AI use in higher eds? What challenges do you vision with AI use in higher eds? So some issue or challenge is the academic integrity issue, as our students may use ChatGPT, AI, cheating, stuff like that. Any challenges did you see or you have right now or you envision with AI in higher ed? Feel free to raise your hand that we can unmute and share your thoughts.
Mason, do you mind elaborating on your point there that you shared in the chat? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I think that's a really great point for the group to hear.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kilia, could you explain, but is it my comment to Jamie or?
Just the scenario of activities for your APE course.
Oh yeah, because for the adapted physical education course, sometimes I ran out of time. So instead of like the searching for the textbooks, like for finding scenario activities, I sometimes ask ChatGPT, okay, give me a scenario of teaching physical education for circle lessons for kids with cerebral palsy. And it gives me an idea, but sometimes those strategies and ideas are quite superficial, not quite target specific. So I finally ended up not using those scenarios, but if I get kind of play with this ChatGPT with some certain specificity and giving more information, I don't know whether it will yield, you know, more detailed scenario activities for adaptations and modifications and how to include the students in physical education lessons. So overall, I think the ChatGPT, because I'm just currently like constantly mentioning about ChatGPT because I don't know whether other AI tools such as Bard or other tools are at the same level with the ChatGPT, but it'll be at their point at some point. But I can say that it's a phenomenal in terms of how creative we can use these tools in a positive way. But sometimes I remember someone mentioned about this as double-edged sword. So it can be a tool for students to get away from their learning moment, just instead of like asking questions and copying and pasting and submitting to their assignment, you know, by meeting the timeline. So I think, yeah, because I don't know how the future will look like, but this AI tool, because I see from my perspective, it is quite a tool that we can accommodate and try to find a wise way to utilize these tools.
Thanks, Mason. Thank you. Any thoughts, any challenges that you have about using ChatGPT in your class or at your university?
Earlier, Hans brought up in the chat about like misinformation, and Chad or others that might have more experience using it might have a better response to this, because I don't, but I'd be curious about that. And I think for lesson planning purposes, you know, it's not necessarily key, but you know, how reliable is sort of the information that's being provided? You know, I think about, for example, if students are writing, you know, a paper on, you know, vaccines or something for a health education course, and you know, where is the line sort of between where information is being generated from, I guess, would be my question with that, is around validity of information being provided.
Great point. Yeah, that's a good point. Is the information reliable or accurate for us to use? And I was wondering, how about your colleagues, your universities, how they respond using ChatGPT or AI? Oh, Hans.
Actually, I'm sorry, Fan. I didn't catch your last question, but I wanted to follow up with something that Jamie said, is that in addition to misinformation, it's incorrect information. And we always seem to hear that we need to produce lesson plans and units and design programs that are sensitive to the local context. And I wonder the degree to which AI tools at this point are sensitive to Lisa Paulson's elementary school in East Cupcake, Nevada, in the sense that, you know, how big the class is, what equipment she has, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just wondering the degree to which AI has evolved sufficiently that it can be sensitive to, shall we say, local needs, local contexts, which then brings up the issue of to what extent are we going to become overly dependent on AI, because I can just plug in some basic information to the AI god and have it produce something that I can use potentially, or probably won't be able to use because it doesn't fit my context. So just curious, and proviso here is I have not used AI. I have not even ventured out on there because I'm scared to death of the whole thing. So there are so many things that we don't even know what's going to happen with it. So
just real quick, while everybody's on here, Hans, I really appreciate that point. And I'm going to say, well, there's 50 people in the room, because I think sometimes on podcasts, we yell into the void. I think the implications you're talking about, Hans, are why we need robust evidence base of why face-to-face physical education is good. And we need to be able to use it, because eventually there's going to be AI systems in online physical education, personally tailored to the student, efficiently collecting assessment data that principals can see that the online PE is effective, you know, according to the learning outcomes it shows. We need to be able to articulate as a field why face-to-face, socially interactive, localized PE is better, so that we can convince our principals. Because when they see, you know, a cheap automated system, at some point that's going to look very appealing. And so I just wanted to say that when there's 50 people on here. Hans, you want to respond?
Well, just really quick, even before AI had been born, the field has had trouble articulating much of what you just suggested, Chad, is to have a consistent plan, to have good assessments, to have quality instruction for a whole host of reasons, obviously. I just don't know if somebody now steams over to the computer and punches in some information in an AI tool, that's going to spit out something that's going to be better. I know that question was brought up earlier, but anyway, I'll shut up. So
yeah, and I'll shut up after I respond, because I think this is an important conversation. I know we're focused on teaching, but yeah, I think the urgency now is key, because these technologies evolve so fast and they are so powerful that you know, as we see more people adopt it and the quality of programming gets better and better, I just think it's going to accelerate a little bit more towards the cheap, efficient, effective PE at the expense of what we know is so valuable in the face-to-face social context, localized PE. That's my spiel. Who's got their hand up? Dan, please.
Yeah, well, actually just kind of thinking about what you were just saying too is, you know, we face such teacher shortages that the worry that it'll just start spitting out things for anybody off the street to come in and teach PE. Huge concern. What I was going to say, Chad, maybe you know the answer to this, is depending on the version of chat, along with challenges, depending on the version of ChatGPT you're using, the older versions are like 3.5. People don't realize it actually isn't connected to the internet. So the data that you're drawing is only as good as about September of 2021. Now, I know the newer versions, and maybe the paid version as well, is going back, I think, to having internet access, which gives you a little bit more a reliable data, especially when it comes to maybe sources that are actually legitimate. But that I don't know, but that's obviously a problem with students using it and the copy and paste and, you know, citations that are completely fictitious and made up. So that's one thing if it's even, again, older versions wasn't even connected to the internet, actually. So
that's a good point, Dan, thank you. Yeah, I think that's important that we talk about here is, how we can use AI, ChatGPT for our teaching and students learning. when we use, I think it's new technology, and it's the world of technology, and I believe in the future we're gonna have new other technologies in the future. And so while those technology are developing, are developed, and how about our students, their cognitive development, their cognitive skills? So how we can, what we need to emphasize, what we need to focus on, or what we need to consider in higher ed, our undergraduate students or graduate students, while those technology, AI, are developing, how about our students, their cognitive skill and development? How are they gonna rely on AI to do the essay, to do the assignments, do the lesson plan, do the assessments, and how we, or should we develop how we emphasize their cognitive skill? Emily?
This is not getting specific to that question, but it's sort of connected, is that perhaps in higher education, we'll need to come to some degree of consensus as to what's acceptable. What's acceptable for our learners to demonstrate knowledge of, what's acceptable for them to supplement with AI or generate with AI, and then effectively communicate that as kind of a signature pedagogy within our individual institutions or across our discipline. That will also be required from a scholarly standpoint. What's acceptable use of AI generated or ChatGPT generated content in publishable works or presented works, or how we analyze empirical data? And so I think, Ping, you bring up an excellent point, and part of it is going to require, well, the challenge will be, just as the 50 some of us on this call, we have such a range of knowledge, awareness, interest, comfort level, tolerance for discomfort and uncertainty, and related to this topic, it makes it hard to come to a consensus when everyone really has such a different perspective. And so in a similar light, are our PEAT institutions and our higher education teacher training programs coming together on different pedagogical models and delivering that with a level of expectation in a similar way to what we would expect students to know and be able to do with this type of tool?
Cool. And Dan, did you raise your hand?
Yeah, I just was going to say, some of the conversations that we've been having at our site is that we know that ChatGPT is good at summarizing and some of that low hanging fruit, but in order to continue to have our students think critically, we have to kind of start changing the way that maybe what it is we're asking. So we're moving ourselves farther up the Bloom's taxonomy and making them do more things, because it, or asking the students to situate it within their own knowledge, or what would you do? Because if you ask, ChatGPT can't give you an opinion or situate things in their own life. They can only look up information that's readily available to them. So thinking about what it is we're actually asking our students to do, I mean, if it's just to repeat basic knowledge, I mean, it's just like having access to Google or Wikipedia, or it's just an advanced search engine, but it's application of knowledge, it's synthesizing knowledge, and it's the things that we're all, of course, striving to make our students the best, you know, teachers that they can be. So more of a comment, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think like their critical thinking, that's one of the skills they really need in our world right now. Another thing is their creativity. So ChatGPT or Google search, I say Google search, all those search engine or chatbots, that all the information are based on existing data or existing resources. So they do not really create new things. That's the difference between a robot and a human is we create new things. We create some new theory or new stuff, while ChatGPT is just generate something using existing data. Cool. And Chad, would you like to move on to the future?
Yep, we can. Thanks, Ping. Jamie, do you want to jump in quick?
Yeah, I'm just curious as to if folks have at your universities, like what the policies and things have been coming out, because I know from like the, in this again, from a research realm as editor of one of the journals in our field, you know, the conversation is evolving kind of as to how journals are responding to the use of this. And I feel like a lot of times universities and other institutions are really slow to respond to new innovation. I think we can all probably agree on that. And so right now there's very broad statement from, you know, the university, the institution that I'm at right now, about how, you know, to respond to its use. But one of the things that we are not able to do is because a colleague of mine this summer said to me, oh, you can always take their responses and put it back in and it'll tell you if it's ChatGPT, if it was generated using AI. But we are actually not allowed to do that from a FERPA standpoint, because we are not allowed to take students' work and put it into an exterior source that isn't approved through the university. And so it's an interesting kind of catch-22 from that standpoint of like, I'm pretty sure that you generated this using AI. I can't really prove it. And so thinking around the challenges associated with that, and I feel like a colleague on this call told me about this. Maybe this conversation Risto and I had in Chile, but about having students, if they use AI for an assignment, having them include like an additional one-page reflection of how they had to change the response to actually make it fit the guidelines of the assignment. And more often than not, students are actually unhappy with the response provided by ChatGPT. And so they no longer use it in an assignment, especially if they have to do an additional one-page reflection of how they made sure that ChatGPT provided the right information and things. So I think that there are ways that we can, you know, work with students in our classes to kind of show them, yes, this is a tool, but you still have to check it. And these are the ways to do that, and kind of incorporating some of those things in that are going to allow them to critically reflect on the content, as we've been kind of talking about where the students come in from that standpoint.
Those are great points, Jamie. Thanks. I just wanted to point out a couple things that are going on in the chat. Colin Webster let us know that this is a ripe area for research. I think those are some good areas to kind of explore. So any early career, anybody interested in this topic, you know, the sky's the limit with this kind of stuff. And I think it's only going to get more interesting as these tools become localized. Get back to Hans's point, where school districts might be able to have their own, you know, localized AI that outputs lesson plans related directly to their context and the student, their student body. Some of this gets way over my head, but I think the technology is rapidly evolving towards localized AI, where a research lab could train on a particular theory and analyze data through those lenses. So I think it's going to get a lot more exciting, or not, depending on your perspective, very rapidly. So I think it is important for us. And these are conversations I think we should have as a profession. The other thing I wanted to ask is if you have any interesting articles, a YouTube video, a tutorial, a blog post, even like a Twitter thread or something that you've seen on this, that's kind of got you thinking, throw it in the chat, and then Ping and I are going to compile those into a blog post for you all to go back and look at. A couple of the Pete organizing group gave an ICEP talk where there was a video with some demonstrations of tools beyond ChatGPT. So we're just talking about ChatGPT today. There's other artificial intelligence tools out there that I think Risto demoed and a few others in Chile. We've got an article we put out through JTPE There's some podcast episodes that have been done on this and related directly to our field and AI. So we're going to put all that in one place. We'll tweet it out, maybe send it out in an email. If you're on the listserv, you'll get that. And that'll kind of have a one-stop shop for some of this information if you want to continue and explore. And so I want to be sensitive to other topic areas, you know, beyond what we sort of brainstormed. Does anybody have anything else that's on their mind related to this that might be good for the community to discuss? I think Emily's point about consensus and conversation, I think, is so important. We need to figure out a way to get that organized in maybe a more official capacity to kind of come down on some guidelines, at least, because I think this is so new. A lot of myself included, we're looking, what should I think about this even? You know, what is appropriate ethical use? And I think conversation helps with that. So maybe that's something, you know, we can continue to move on. What else do we want to talk about? Courtney, jump in.
Hi, thanks for having me. So NAU, Northern Arizona University, I feel like our college has been extremely proactive in addressing this issue. At our welcome back department meeting, we basically had a faculty-wide discussion on this topic, and we came to a consensus that it's not going away. I mean, at the dinner table, I have an eighth grader and a 12th grader, and I said, tell me about ChatGPT. And my 12th grader pipes up and says, Mom, like Cactus AI is way better. It gives you way more reliable sources and gives you way quicker information. So for my sophomore to be using it and to be so knowledgeable about the fact that it's there and that there's other platforms that are better, I think speaks to the fact that it is not going away. And we are going to have to use this as a pedagogical tool, and we are going to have to change the way that we deliver our assignments with the expectation of maybe even teaching our students that it's all about the prompt and it's all about how you write the prompt that's going to generate you the information you need. And once you write a quality prompt, now synthesize and analyze that information with this peer-reviewed journal article that supports the same topic we're about and find the misinformation. And I've done that in a course, and the students were surprised that I knew about ChatGPT as their faculty member and that I was open to them using it in certain ways. But again, you have to have the conversation about academic integrity and misinformation. I think it's unrealistic for us to expect pre-service candidates to just be able to create these lesson plans with dynamic tasks. It is going to be a tool for them that is not going away. So I think we, whether we like to or not, whether we do it kicking and screaming or through the lens of research and digging deeper, we're going to have to modify our practice. It's there.
Courtney, I totally agree. It's like right now we have ChatGPT and AI, and then later on we're gonna have new technology. We're gonna deal with all those new technology for our teaching. So I mean, last November when the ChatGPT came out, everybody was talking about ChatGPT, and it was so scary, and just, oh wow, that's so scary. So do we still need a human to do the work? But now we know some pros and cons, and I think the next step is really get to know this tool, how we can use it effectively for our teaching and for our students' learning. It's there, and maybe they're gonna have more technology coming out. I think we kind of need to accept it and to learn how to use it.
I think going along with that too is like, what if a student in your class doesn't want to use it? Is that legitimate? And how do we address that? especially as we learn more about it and the impact it can have on our humanity, what, you know, philosophically speaking. I think there's some deep philosophical issues at play here. Jamie Brunson on the call. He's my philosopher, you know, a local philosopher in our field. But, you know, I think those perspectives are needed as well to balance out this, you know, progress at all costs. I'm not being critical because I, you know, technology is helpful. We saw in the chat, you know, is using a chat GPT, if it makes the roll the ball out teacher better, is that wrong? You know, like you can't argue against that because it's good for the kids if what chat GPT spits out is better than what they're currently doing. But, you know, there is also some nuance involved. If kids don't want to use it, you know, how are we going to respond to that? Do we make ChatGPT subscription like a textbook? It's $20 a month. So it'd be what, $80 for the semester for your, you know, for this course? Is that a required text now or a required course resource? And then again, what if kids don't want to do that? Because as soon as you put it on your computer, it has access to everything you ever typed, and, you know, there's data privacy, you know, potential issues with that. So it's, I think it is more complex and overwhelming in many ways than just like accepting it or not. And so how does this conversation, you know, play in your mind as you reflect on this? I think it's a good start. You know, I think there's a lot more issues. ChatGPT is telling me right here, there are 12 more issues that we haven't talked about yet that are really important. About the pedagogical relevance, the authenticity of experience, accessibility and equity. Is it a supplement? Does it replace the teacher? What about data security and privacy? Ethical considerations, cultural and contextual relevance. So, you know, we've only skimmed the surface on this, but I'm just so appreciative of everybody's insight here. I think it's really great that you're, you know, people are open to share positives and negatives here. And I think it's indicative of the continuing conversation our field needs to have. Particularly because children are involved, physical activity is involved. And anytime we sort of, you know, apply technology to those things, I think there are serious questions we need to be able to grapple with. And so Jamie or Emily has a really fun announcement that we're excited to share. And after that, you know, we generally stay on the call till around 5:30. We'll stop the recording once, you know, everything's been said. And then anybody that wants to hang out a little bit more for some additional conversations, 100% more than welcome to do so.
Yeah, thanks so much. And thanks, Chad and Ping, for leading a really timely and important discussion. And for those of you that have been tuning in to the Peak Collaborative for a long time, or those of you, there's some new faces that and voices, which we're so excited to see and hear. You know, you might know that the Peak Collaborative was really born out of what we felt was a necessity in the field at the time. It started in crisis, as our Quest article discusses, shameless plug there. But really has continued through collaboration and community. And we started this in 2020, I believe it was April, maybe was our first one, where we were like, oh, great, this, you know, we're all on lockdown, none of us are teaching, let's get together and kind of find out how we can all support each other. And we've responded to critical issues in our field, like the murder of George Floyd and how that impacts, you know, folks in our profession, especially around racism and all of those issues. And we've talked about things as, you know, mundane as, you know, creating partnerships. So we've really spanned the gamut, I guess, as with respect to types of conversations. And as the organizing group, so myself and Emily and Chad and Kason O'Neill, and now our newest members, Ping, Shannon, and Donal, we have, you know, great ideas, and we take contributions from you all, from the community, with surveys and things like that of what people are interested in hearing about. But we've decided to kind of take a little bit of a different route for the spring and actually open up proposals for people who are interested in leading sessions. In the past, we've sort of reached out to people, panelists with different expertise in different areas, try to be really conscious of being inclusive and equitable and having diverse voices at the table. And so we are really excited to announce that we are, and Emily or someone will hopefully drop a link in the chat to our proposal form, that we're going to be inviting proposals for the spring sessions starting in January for the Peak Collaborative, and really kind of wanting people to kind of bear in mind our solution-oriented collaborative discussions that we have. This is not like a conference proposal where we want people to talk to us about their research for an hour and 15 minutes. We really want it to be discussion-based and collaborative in nature. And so if folks are interested and have a topic that they think would be compelling for others in the Peak community to hear from, then please feel free to submit a proposal. Our reviews of the proposals will kind of be ongoing. We have no idea how many people are going to submit proposals. So, you know, we may have 20 or we may have 3. And so we are not guaranteeing that, you know, proposals will for sure turn into a session of the Peak Collaborative. But we are really excited to be able to showcase people's voices in this way that are outside of kind of the realm of our own brains and ideas and whatnot. So please do save that link to that form if you are interested in putting together a proposal. We love to have various stakeholders as panelists. So, you know, thinking outside of our direct field and looking at, you know, different stakeholders, undergraduate students, current teachers, administrators, you know, policymakers, different things like that, that you can think about. But again, thinking about creating a space for discussion on topics that are relevant to our field. And Emily or Chad or others, I'm not sure if anyone wants to add anything about that process.
I think you summed it up in a really amazing way. So we just encourage you to think it through. We might have to adjust some of the settings. We've had one or two people say maybe that some settings might be an issue with that form, but you know, as we review the proposals as a group, we'll probably look for commonalities or looking to connect if there are groups that have similar interests as a way to enhance or encourage some collaboration and working together. And so it's we'll continue to be working alongside folks and kind of excited to see how this moves the collaborative and our community together.
Yes, so I think at this time we'll kind of move to our informal discussion, and folks that want to stick around for a little while can. And if not, you're, you know, obviously free to run. We are meeting again in November and December, the first Thursday of the month. Same Zoom link, so feel free to share that with colleagues and graduate students and others. And yeah, we'll see you next time, and thanks for joining us.